It happened one night after I had fallen asleep while reading the lyrics of a song. I had not slept well for months now, and so far I had been able to avoid my nightmares by busying myself day and night with listening to and writing the lyrics of Bob Marley's songs. But that night, I had a nightmare that was different from the ones I had been having. It began with my swimming in a river at Matrujong with my brother, Junior. We dove to the bottom of the river and brought out oysters. We placed them on a rock and plunged to the deep again. We were competing with each other. In the end, Junior got more oysters than I did. We ran home for dinner, racing each other. When we got there, the food was sitting in pots, but no one was around. I turned to ask my brother what was happening, but he was gone. I was alone, and it was dark. I searched for a lamp and found it, but I was afraid. My forehead was sweating. I took the lamp to the living room, where a box of matches sat on the table. I lit the lamp, and as soon as the room was bright, I saw men standing all around. They had circled me in the dark. I could see their bodies, except for their faces, which were darker, as if they were headless walking beings. Some were barefoot and others wore army boots. All had guns and knives. They began to shoot, stab, and slice each other's throats, but they would rise and then get killed again. Their blood began to fill the room, its tide quickly rising. They wailed, causing me great anguish. I held my ears to stop hearing them, but I began to feel their pain. Each time a person was stabbed, I felt it worse. I saw the blood dripping from the same part of my body as that of the victim. I began to cry as the blood filled the room. The men disappeared and the door immediately opened, letting the blood out with a rush. I went outside with the blood all over me and saw my mother, father, older and younger brother. They were all smiling as if nothing had happened, as if we had been together all this time. "Sit down, Mr. Troublesome," my father said. "Don't mind him," my mother chuckled. I sat down facing my father, but couldn't eat with them. My body had gotten numb, and my family didn't seem to notice that I was covered with blood. It began to rain, and my family ran into the house, leaving me outside. I sat in the rain for a while, letting it clean the blood off me. I got up to go into the house, but it wasn't there. It had disappeared. I was looking around confused when I woke up from the dream. I had fallen off my bed. I got up and went outside and sat on the stoop, looking into the night. I was still confused as I couldn't tell whether I'd had a dream or not. It was the first time I had dreamt of my family since I started running away from the war. The next afternoon, I went to see Esther and she could tell that something was bothering me. "Do you want to lie down?" she asked, almost whispering. "I had this dream last night. I don't know what to make of it," I said, looking away. She came and sat next to me and asked, "Would you like to tell me about it?" I didn't reply. "Or just talk about it out loud and pretend I am not here. I won't say anything, only if you ask me." She sat quietly beside me. The quietness lasted for a while, and for some reason I began to tell her my dream. At first she just listened to me, and then gradually she started asking questions to make me talk about the lives I had lived before and during the war. "None of these things are your fault," she would always say sternly at the end of every conversation. Even though I had heard that phrase from every staff member, and frankly, I had always hated it, I began that day to believe it. It was the genuine tone in Esther's voice that made the phrase finally begin to sink into my mind and heart. That didn't make me immune from the guilt that I felt for what I had done. Nonetheless, it lightened my bothersome memories and gave me strength to think about things. The more I spoke about my experiences to Esther, the more I began to cringe at the gruesome details, even though I didn't let her know that. I didn't completely trust Esther. I only liked talking to her because I felt that she didn't judge me for what I had been a part of. She looked at me with the same inviting eyes and welcoming smile that said I was a child. One evening, Esther took me to her house and made me dinner. After dinner, we went for a walk in the city. We went to the wharf at the end of Rawdon Street. The moon was out that night, and we sat at the jetty and watched it. I told Esther about the shapes I used to see in the moon when I was much younger. She was fascinated. We looked at the moon and described the shapes we saw to each other. I saw the woman cradling the baby in her arms, just as I used to, On our way back to her house, I didn't look at the city lights any longer. I looked into the sky and felt as if the moon was following us. When I was a child, my grandmother told me that the sky speaks to those who look and listen to it. She said, "In the sky, there are always answers and explanations for everything, every pain, every suffering, joy, and confusion." That night, I wanted the sky to talk to me.